Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Welcome to my good bad brain. I'm a normal person, so I'm insane. I've got depression and ADHD, but I'm doing better since I medicated me. I'm still not always sure whether I exist or what being a person even really is, but I figured out a long time ago that being alive is
hi. All right. This episode of the podcast is very interesting. I did keep this one more concise because I had just done an interview a few days before or a little while, whatever, that was like, oh, I did it again. We went too long. I'm going to keep this more focused. So I think this one's a more focused episode, but it is. It definitely is, because I jumped right in. I jumped right in with a question, because the way this came about was I ended up doing a gig with Laura, who's my guest, Laura Cassidy, on this. And while we were on the gig, she was like, volunteered of her own, you know, just, it was a, like, oh, mental health is so important to me. I have this and this, and I take this and this, and I just think it's important to get that thing out there and talk about it more. And I was like, oh, yeah, I certainly agree with you. I have a podcast that's all about that. You should come be a guest on it. And she's like, no, seriously, would you? I would love that, because it's really important to me. And I was like, okay, great. So we made it happen. And I will say, this was really interesting. What Laura is talking about having here is different eating disorder stuff. She's experienced orthorexia, which is basically like over healthy, like you think everything is bad, sort of like, I'm going to say this wrong, but like you're very concerned with everything has to be healthy, and you're too concerned with, like, quote unquote, the idea that your food being healthy or not, to a place of, you know, not eating anything, to like really hurting yourself. And it's hand in hand with, she also diagnosed, she said, with anorexia nervosa, which was itself hand in hand, I guess, a common trait of borderline personality, which is something that she lives with and experiences. And it was a really interesting talk to me. I've never been diagnosed with any of these things, but similar to a conversation that I had a while ago with Zach on this podcast, where we talked about body dysmorphia, this conversation, listening to her habits around how she interacts with food and eating and sense of self around that, listening to how she uses or copes with and has to walk this interesting fine line with fitness and the fitness world and physical practices and her anorexia and borderline stuff and those sort of, like, that, you know what I mean? Because, like, are you the tracking of, am I using this to hurt myself or help myself? What's going on here? From what place am I operating? Just the way she thinks about food and her body and herself, I was like, boy, this is hitting real close to home. And I don't know. I was like, in the past, I've also been concerned that I may be borderline based on conversations I've had and doctors have had, an experience I had in relationships. Here's another thing, interesting thing about the idea of borderline. She says this in the thing, but that, like, it's not chemical the way, like, schizophrenia or bipolar is, that, like, if you have those things, they are things that you'll probably have to deal with your whole life. And, you know, her understanding of, again, we're not experts, but what we've learned and what we're sharing and what we've learned or understand. And that those kind of things do take chemical management. That borderline personality is interesting in that it's not that you can change it. You can change the way you think about things. And we talked a few weeks ago with Dr. Nick Barr about DBT, the dialectical behavioral therapy, and he was saying how that's a thing that they use to treat borderline and that they use to treat PTSD in some people. And this is something that Laura uses and has learned and continues to use, this DBT, this dialectical behavioral therapy. And so getting to talk to somebody, it was like kind of an amazing coincidence a few weeks later to be able to talk about that. But as she's talking about it, and this idea that DBT is something that you can fix in a sense, like you can change your thoughts about yourself, you can change your thinking patterns, and that it is about that, those practices and disciplines, as opposed to it sheerly being like a chemical thing that you may have to manage with medication for your whole life. I thought that's a very hopeful thing, but also makes it very difficult. And apparently borderline can be very difficult to treat because you can get these situations where it's this love, hate, extreme emotional response thing where you're as person with borderline, those borderline people can like end up just hating their therapist, and they're like, "You hate me, you hate me, I hate you." And that can make it very difficult to create the trust and the work that is required for DBT to work and to deal with the borderline thing. So I just thought it was an interesting thing to talk about, that like it can be very tricky, but also it is something that you can fix and is curable. And yeah, I don't know. It's really interesting. Laura was really great. She was really open about it. And she's also, you know, like a lot of people who end up on this podcast, a creative person, an actor and a singer and an artist. And I don't think it's a coincidence that a lot of folks, I don't know if it's, I don't know which way that chicken or egg goes. If we have good, bad brains first, that leads us to creativity because we don't know what else to do. And we got to like sort it out and just like really practice being people and think about being people so much of our lives that might as well make it our work. Or it's probably that. I was going to say, I don't know if it's chicken or egg, but it's probably that leads you to that rather than I don't think you go crazy because of the arts. But they certainly could do that. They could make you do that probably. Anyway, this was a lovely, lovely conversation. I know I overuse the word lovely. I can't, I have like four words. I like wonderful, I like terrific, I like lovely, and probably just like dope or sick, something like that. But it was a lovely conversation with a lovely person, Laura Cassidy. I hope you guys enjoy our conversation about all kinds of stuff, but especially borderline personality and, eating disorders, basically. May hit close to home for you the way it did for me. All right, yeah, here we go. Into it. All right, we're recording.
Okay, cool.
Hi, welcome.
Hi.
Laura Cassidy.
Hi, thank you so much
for joining me.
Thank you so much for having me.
Before we started recording, we started getting into it. So I feel like this might be one of the more focused episodes I've ever done. You have borderline.
Yes, I do.
Okay. What is that? Because I don't really know. I've heard the term a lot, but I really don't understand it. I've been worried I have borderline.
Really?
And I don't really know. Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. But I was like, I think when you look at things like between bipolar, borderline, a lot of just ADHD responses, I think it can be hard to understand the difference between those things or why one thing is the other. And I know you're not a professional or anything like that, but you have it. And so I'm just curious about your experience, about what you've been made to understand that means and what it actually means for you personally.
Okay, so I actually just recently discovered this. Like I've been living with it my entire life because it's something, it's a set of behaviors. Like it's not a specific mental disorder, it's a set of behaviors. So I decided to look up the actual definition of it to see. But it's a mental disorder characterized by unstable moods, behavior, and relationships.
See, that's like that for, you know, feels like it could be so many of us.
And it is. It's a very broad, not specific, like that's not very specific, but it does fall under the umbrella of bipolar disorder as well.
Oh.
So a lot of times you can be kind of confused as to which you have, because at first, years ago, my doctors thought that I was bipolar, but then we kind of ruled that out and I'm not bipolar.
Do you know like why they said you weren't bipolar, or what would it have meant if you were? Did it have to do with like the mechanism or the ability to, the medicine?
It has to do with the criteria. Like, okay. You have to fit a certain amount of criteria in order to actually be diagnosed with something. And I did not fit the criteria for it. Like, for the symptoms of borderline, there are 9 symptoms of borderline. And there's so many different symptoms, sure, you have. But one of the big ones are fear of abandonment. And people with borderline are often terrified about being abandoned or, mm-hmm, left alone. And they'll go to the extremes to kind of keep people there. Like, I hear this a lot with borderline, with in relationships. Let's say, like, their boyfriend or girlfriend wants to leave them because it is very difficult to be in a relationship, mm-hmm, with someone with borderline. And they would automatically go to, I'm going to kill myself. Like, they have very
responses.
Yes, exactly. They have very, very extreme responses, unstable relationships, unclear or unstable self-image, impulsive self-destructive behaviors. Self-harm is very common, which is why I have an eating disorder as well, because it is kind of, an eating disorder is a form of self-harm. Like, you're physically hurting your body.
And also,
you know?
I did, like, body dysmorphia feels like really similar to what they were just said, the unstable self-image or something like that. Like, was that one of the things you just said?
Oh, yes, exactly. Yeah.
So, like, that sounds like also like hand in hand.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
It's kind of hard to diagnose things. And also, we don't really have a lot of information or studies on them that we should. So it's kind of an evolving thing. Like, I actually don't know if I fully have borderline, like 100%, but I have a lot of traits. My psychiatrist has told me, you definitely fit the spectrum. Like, I have, like, I owe, like, a lot of them, a lot of symptoms are also extreme emotional swings, chronic feelings of emptiness, explosive anger. And I had a lot of those. I felt constantly alone. I did not know how to deal with anger at all. I would just kind of, like, I would go from 0 to 100, like, real quick. And I didn't know what to do because I was not taught the skills to handle the behaviors. Like, I was born, basically you're born with sensitivity, like extreme sensitivity. Mm. That's what, like, borderline is. And you don't know how to handle it. Like, it's something it's really scary too. Like, when you feel like you can't control yourself or you feel like everyone around you is afraid of you, it's a very lonely disorder.
Yeah.
Like, it is definitely very lonely.
When did that start showing up for you?
Oh, as soon as I was about like 5.
Really?
As young as 5. I actually was hospitalized when I was 8 for an attempted suicide attempt.
Oh my God.
Yes.
You were 8?
When I was 8 years old. I was actually one of the youngest cases. That's what I remember the doctor saying, that I was one of the youngest cases. We're kind of confused as to why it happens, because a lot of borderline symptoms will show from trauma, abuse, or just situations that have happened in your life. And I do have history of abuse as a child. So that's kind of where I think it came from, because I had this trauma. I didn't know how to handle those types of feelings. Mm-hmm. And I just acted out, and that was it. And I had like a skewed version of myself, and I couldn't really see myself how I was, which is a big, big thing of feeling like you don't really know who you are, because it's a personality disorder, you know?
Yeah. It's just wild to think. Because my understanding is some people do say borderline is just like a form of PTSD, like it's an extreme form of PTSD.
Yes, yeah.
And you were saying when we were working together the other day, like, that you've done DBT stuff.
Yes, that is actually what will help with, that's the treatment for borderline, is obviously medication too. Like, I mean, I actually do know some people with borderline that don't take medication and only strictly do DBT, but the main thing is dialectical behavioral therapy.
Yeah.
And basically what DBT is dialectics, is having something be able to, I'm trying to say this in the right way. It can be the same. Like, something can be really happy and also sad at the same time. Like, things can be at the, like, does that make sense?
Yeah. To not, so you're not
black and white thinking.
Yeah.
That's also a big symptom. We have a lot of black and white thinking. Like, it's either all or nothing. Mm-hmm. We don't have that middle area. It's either I love you so much or I hate you. Mm-hmm. You know, there's no like, I kind of like you. So what it does, what dialectics teaches you, is to kind of accept and to be, And that's very, very important. And I want to fight to get this in schools, because I think that dialectical behavioral therapy isn't just something for borderline. It treats people with anxiety, depression, if you're suicidal, schizophrenic or bipolar, or literally any type of disorder.
Yeah.
I believe that DBT can treat.
Well, can you give me an example, like, of how it, like, what the tools are, like, if you have, if you're having a bad day or something?
We
like,
are taught skills. Yeah. So basically, we are taught to rewire our brain. Mm. That's literally what it is we start from the bottom up. We have to learn how to handle certain situations. So we have, like, an entire book, and it's the DBT book. And it gives us all these types of skills and coping mechanisms instead of going from 0 to 100 really quick. There's one of my favorite is the stop mechanism. And that's you stop, you observe the situation, you actually like, you have to access your wise mind. So we have emotion mind and we have wise mind. And when we're, borderline people are in emotion mind, that's when we act out. That's when we do like our quote unquote borderline behaviors, or we can go into manic episodes. And the skills of DBT is kind of taught to either stop it or calm it down. And the stop skill is like observing, really figuring out, where am I? Am I going to be hurt right now? Is someone emotionally attacking me? Is someone physically attacking me? Is, am I safe? Just like, you really have to think about it. Like you have to, a lot of meditation is also really important. And because you have to access, your wise mind, which is hard to do.
Yeah, in a heightened state.
That's why it's difficult. Actually, the inventor, Marsha Linehan, who invented DBT, she was borderline, which I still don't understand how she managed to come up with something while also being borderline.
Yeah.
Like, that is something
incredible to
me.
It's definitely like would be so urgent for her. And if you're already I think a lot of mental health professionals have had like struggled with things that leads them to that field.
My therapists are recovered eating disorders. People with eating disorders. Yeah, they're all recovered. And I actually really like that. Not to put anyone down who has like studied this for years, but I just feel like if you've gone through it, you have a different way of looking at it, and you can really understand people. Yeah. Like when you're in someone's shoes, like you get it. You really do. Like me and my therapists, we have a lot of the same behaviors. And since they went through it, they can tell me, hey, this is what I did in order to, you know, ease myself.
Can you give me some examples of that? Like what's like?
So a lot of times when I'm not feeling good in my body, I like to body compare. Like that is, and that's something that even people that are not diagnosed with eating disorders do. Like it is very prominent. Like the comparison game is really, really popular now.
Yeah.
So
social media and everything.
Oh my gosh, it's awful. So what I like to do is, let's say like I am on social media and I see a girl and I'm like, oh my gosh, her body's gorgeous. Like she has this, she has that. First of all, I reframe, it's called a reframed thought. So I reframe my thoughts and I'm like, well, one, I don't know this person. I have no idea what she's going through. I don't know her life. I don't know if she suffers from an eating disorder and that's why she looks that way.
Are you saying that because like you start at like this body this person has, and then you associate that with all these like positive things, like they must have a better life, they must be a better person.
Yeah, exactly. Like, oh, she's so skinny, she's so pretty, she gets all this attention, blah blah blah, like I'm fat, I'm this, I'm that, you know. But instead of kind of criticizing myself and putting myself down, I just have to learn how to accept she was born in that body and I'm born in my body. She was genetically made to look like that. And she's healthy in that body, but actually, I don't even know that. Right. I have no idea. That's another reason why you don't know what people are going through.
But
so I can't think that.
You're doing that stop thing and you're like, you're like removing your instinctive value judgments.
Exactly.
And
just yeah,
like
exactly.
Looking, and just saying like, well, this isn't good or bad. This is what it is.
That's it. That's exactly what dialectics are. It's not good or bad. It's just learning how to accept. It's called radical acceptance. It's just learning to accept what is and that there's really nothing that you can do about it. You know, we had to do something in therapy before Thanksgiving and we had to write down things we can control, things we can kind of control and things we can't control at Thanksgiving. And writing it out really helped me kind of realize like the world is not going to baby me. Like it's not going to be there for me and cradle me. I need to learn to accept that the world is a crazy place.
Yeah.
And it's not going to be sensitive to my needs. And I can only change my reaction, my response to other people. No matter how hard you try, you cannot change another person. You can only change yourself and how you respond to them.
Yeah. That's, and that includes like how you respond to your own thoughts and your own emotions in a way. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah, exactly.
Like you'll have like this reaction and be like, well, this must be true. I'm a piece of shit and that person's a really cool, good person because of how they look on Instagram. And then you have to like, I don't know that I feel like I experienced that where like you have
Everybody
to like stop
does.
Your own mind and mm-hmm. hold things. I mean that idea of like just looking at objective reality and as a not a bad or good thing. I think that's really hard to do.
It's hard for anyone. Like Buddhas have issues with doing, you know, like meditation and all this. And we have to be taught how to do it.
Yeah.
That's what I mean by starting from the bottom up. Like this is an extremely difficult thing, but it's possible.
Yeah. I had this strange, like a long time ago, I was like, I just, you know, I was super existential crisis at some time. I mean, whatever, all the time. But there was this, I had this thought and I still struggle how to like say it correctly, but I was just like, anything that exists isn't like has a the thought was that like anything that exists, no matter how bad it is, isn't like defying the laws of physics. It's not like from outside of reality. You mm-hmm. can't say it like is wrong in the universe. Like it fits here and it exists, and that implied to me some not like a good thing mm-hmm. but not a bad thing either, just that things that are mm-hmm. and that we, if I could really understand that, then I wouldn't have to feel so cursed and oppressed by the constant horror of the world, of like the things like war and, you know, petty cruelty and mm-hmm. things that just seem to never stop, you know, different kinds of bigotry and marginalization, that it helped to go like, these aren't good things. They're actually bad if you're looking at them in like some kind of subjective sense.
Yeah.
But that they exist. And
we have to accept it.
I have to accept that, and that like that doesn't mean accept it in the sense of like
don't try and stop it, give into it. Absolutely not.
Like
no, but like it's, we can't just kind of be like, okay, the world sucks. Bye.
Yeah,
like,
exactly. The thought that there's some enormous like satanic energy to this thing that like is outside of, you know, like something corrupting reality itself, and that because those things felt like they would poison me, and I felt like I was part of that poison energy, that there's something just essentially wrong with me, and that like, you know, and this kind of feeling about the universe and a belief that some things are really fucking toxic and poisonous and bad, including myself, and some things aren't, was ridiculous. Like it's that's that black and white thinking,
yeah,
and that like, you know, creating some ability to step back from my, I always pictured it as stepping back from myself, like a ghost version of me, like mm-hmm. leaves my body and looks at me.
Yeah.
That like in doing that, you could just look at the things and not, and stop feeling like the world was against you or that everything was bad and it was never going to get better. And so like, what's the fucking point? And just go like, it's not even that. It's just, this is just the shape of the map. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yes. Yes.
Like that the reality doesn't have an intention to punish me.
No, not at all.
You know what I mean?
We just think that way. Like I'm actually curious now, what made you think, because you mentioned before that you said you thought that you were borderline. What made you think that?
Relationships I've been in and the stuff you described there. Sorry, I took a piece of bite of toast. Extreme responses.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's interesting because a lot of ADHD stuff feels like there's a lot of Venn diagram stuff going on there.
Yeah.
So that extreme hyperarousal, emotional hyperarousal, rejection sensitivity disorder stuff, where mm-hmm. like if you got the slightest feeling that someone was rejecting you or like didn't like you or disapproved or something like that, it would like feel like this physical pain.
Yes,
in your chest.
That's what happens to me too. And that's something that I am currently working on in therapy, is the second that I feel like someone doesn't, like I base my opinions off of other people and it's awful. Like
awful.
It's so bad. Is
I totally get
if
that.
Someone's just like, hey, you look good today. I'm like, oh, okay, I guess I look good. Someone's just like, wow, like you suck. I'm just like, okay, I suck. Like, I'm a piece of shit. Yeah. You know, like that's.
But I feel like you'll also start to just like look for punishing things.
Yes.
Like
that
if someone's be like, oh, you seem tired. You'll start just being like, do I look tired? Do I look sick? Am I ugly? What's fucking wrong with me? Oh God, I gotta get on my shit.
We have very obsessive thoughts. Like very, like as soon as I start borderline to feel. Yes. That and also with like the eating disorder and also, eating disorders are very common with borderline. They they kind of go hand in hand.
Yeah.
And so those two mixtures together are just like a huge anxiety disorder.
I have said in the past that I don't believe I have an eating disorder, but I do have disordered eating. Like,
oh yeah, a lot of people do. No. A lot of people do. And I don't like the fact that there's a stigma that women have eating disorders. It's just women.
Right. No.
And that you have to be stick thin, like bones, and that's an eating disorder. Like, no, there's not. You can be in any type of body and have an eating disorder. It has to do with your thought process and the way that you treat food. It doesn't matter how you look. There was a girl at my treatment center and she went to a hospital and they told her she wasn't skinny enough to be diagnosed with an eating disorder.
Crazy.
And I just, I was so sick to my stomach. I said, absolutely. Like, that's basically encouraging her to die almost because she was already so small.
Yeah.
And they were just saying, yeah, you don't reach this, the body mass
What does that mean?
Criteria.
Like, can you explain? You said this thing about like, it's about the way you think about food. It's the way, like, what do you mean?
There's so many different reasons for eating disorders. Like, what people don't understand is it's about the body, but it's not about the body, but it is about the body. Like,
but like
there,
for
it's
you,
so many,
like for you, what's it?
For me,
how does it manifest?
I believe, well, I found out in therapy, and I didn't know this until I went to therapy, that I've had disordered eating since I was 8 years old. I had orthorexia, which is obsessive with health. I wouldn't eat my own birthday cake. It took me a week to eat a Twinkie in a therapist's office. Like, I was so afraid of quote unquote junk food. I just wouldn't eat anything and I lost so much weight, and that's what orthorexia is. And then I was just upset. I would always ask, is this healthy? I was just obsessed with health.
What would you consider healthy at the time?
Just like vegetables, like proteins, just nothing that was like a dessert.
Well, I just think
much.
That's so interesting. Like, would you eat pasta and bread and stuff?
Yeah, I did.
See, like, I just think
it was just desserts that scared me.
Yeah, okay. Because like, I've heard that term orthorexia before, and I just think about it a lot because it so much of it doesn't actually have to do with what's healthy either. Like, it's like what your idea of healthy is.
Yeah,
and you know what I mean? Like, there's people who would tell you any kind of carb is like absolutely fucking bad for you, and like never eat a grain. That's super unhealthy.
No,
or, you know, keto, primal, or kind of stuff.
That's
or
actually so bad for your body.
I mean, I've known people who have really good responses, and I truly believe in like all my weird explorations of diet stuff that like you just got to know your own body. You
At the end of the day, yes.
See what functions with it. But you know what I mean? It's just like, it's very strict. Like for me, the disordered eating thing. My friend said to me one time, I was like doing another kind of a restricted diet thing, like something like that. It was like a keto thing or a paleo or something like that. I was like, I'm gonna do this for a while. And they go like, oh yeah, you always got to struggle. You know,
you do you know what you just said? Huh? You just said restricted diet.
Yeah. Which is what that would be.
That's what a diet is. It's restriction. And that's what leads to eating disorders. All diets are restriction. They're not.
Right.
If your diet is telling you that you can't eat some of your favorite foods, you need to get a new diet.
Like, sure.
You just need to learn how to intuitively eat. And that's what we're taught in my treatment center.
Yeah.
At Keystone. Shout out to Keystone. That's my treatment center. And they are absolutely the best. I love them. But we're learned to listen to your bodies, because that's what I don't seem to understand is how you can look at a scale or an app to tell you how much your body needs. You know that. If you're hungry, eat. If you're not hungry, don't eat. Like, you don't need something to tell you what to do to your body. Like, you just got to listen to yourself, because counting macros, doing these diets, paleo, keto, like, that's not meant to be sustainable. Mm-hmm. And people think that it is, but it's not. Every person that I have known that has done any of those diets now intuitively eat or have entered eating disorders.
Yeah. No, I think you're right. I think there is something to that. I don't know. It's weird because, like, if you do have a lot of stomach problems and stuff, like, because I know you've had, I know you've, like, stomach stuff your whole life too. And, and you're also in the fitness world.
Yes.
So this is like interesting to talk to you about because those can all be very gateway things. Mm-hmm. Like I still think if a teenager like comes to you and I remember like the town I grew up in had like one of the biggest eating disorder. It was Highland Park, Illinois, and this hospital, mm-hmm. the eating disorder center, like one of the prominent ones of the country, I guess. Mm-hmm. But I remember them saying like, you know, if your kid like does suddenly become like raw vegan or something like mm-hmm. that, they're like, that's fine. Pay attention because a lot of times you can use one of these diets, quote unquote, as just an excuse to like say no to a lot of things.
And I did that too.
Really?
I did that when I had surgery because I was born with 20 inches of extra colon.
Right.
I don't know why. I just was. And after my surgery, I was on a very strict diet. I couldn't have anything fibrous. Hmm. So I couldn't have any wheat. I couldn't have any vegetables. Like it was very, very strict. And I did lose a little bit of weight because I couldn't eat as much as I normally would. And I got like happy about it. I was very excited. And I was like, oh, like, well, I have a colon issue and it's very sensitive. So, you know, maybe I should just not eat this stuff at all. Like I should just, it started to kind of morph into eating disorder thoughts. Like I used my surgery as an excuse to restrict myself and I caught on to that. And I was
I fucking do that. I totally fucking do that. I don't know. It's weird to hear you say that. It's, I go through like phases where I'll be like, all right, I'm going to be strict for a while now. I'm too inflammatory. My guts are bothering me. We're just going to do this thing. And I'll do that for a little while and things will be like maybe a little better, maybe not. You can never tell. It's like psychosomatic, whatever. Mm-hmm. And then I'll be like, fuck this. That's not how I think about food. I love all kinds of food and blah, blah, blah. And then I'll go like crazy with like cookies and cakes. And I just like, you know what I mean?
Yes.
Like I'll like react to it the other way and be like, what the fuck am I doing? I'm just a person. I can eat whatever I want.
Yeah.
But then it really is like bopping between these.
It is. It's
extremes.
It's exactly what you said. It's bopping between. That's why we have to learn how to find that happy middle of moderation.
Yeah. Just
that's
being
all
a
that it is. You know, like if you want a cookie, eat the fucking cookie. If you want an apple, eat the apple. If you want the cookie and the apple, eat the cookie and the apple.
Right.
Like that's it. Obviously, I wouldn't recommend going and eating like In-N-Out 3 times a day, you know, because it's not about like, oh, that's junk food. It's about nutrients. Like at the end of the day, if you're not getting enough nutrients in your body, you are going to feel like shit.
And I think that's why, like, if you go on like a restricted diety thing.
I felt horrible.
Here's the thing. All those keto things and stuff do tell you, they basically say eat a lot of it. They do say eat a lot of vegetables, eat a lot of vegetables. Mm-hmm. But you kind of like, it's just hard to do that on the go and you associate it with just like
gassy.
You know,
much vegetables.
But I think the result is that you end up eating like the same three things and mm-hmm. you don't feel good. And this idea of just eating a diverse amount of just like stuff that's good for you. I really think the act of listening to yourself is very challenging. And what you were saying about the wisdom mind versus the emotion mind.
The wise mind,
That like that is not an easy thing to really tune into, I think, if you're unpracticed at it.
No, that's why I want to get it into schools.
Well, especially if it's associated with things like hunger or you know what I mean? Or like a physical bodily need and response that now you've added also like psychological factors onto. I think I definitely eat with emotions like crazy.
A lot of humans do. That's not something that's rare at all. Like we do. Like that's why desserts are invented. You don't eat a dessert to, you know, because it gives you nutrients. You eat a dessert because it makes you feel good and it makes you happy and brings serotonin to you, you know?
Is that something that like they talk to you about in therapy?
Oh yeah, really? Definitely. Like, cause I was very obsessed with looking at the nutrition labels to see like how many calories, how many carbs, the fats, blah, blah, blah. And, I went grocery shopping with my dietitian and she saw me looking at the nutrition labels and she's just like, why are you doing that? And I'm just like, specifically for all the dessert, she's like, why are you looking at a nutrition label for the dessert? Like, why? And I was just like, I just want to know. I just want to know. And she goes, dude, like, you know that there's going to be a lot of sugar. You know there's going to be a lot of calories. You know that. Why are you torturing yourself? They're not meant to give you health benefits. It's meant for your soul and to make you feel good. Literally all you're doing is just hurting yourself. like eat it.
By reading and being like, this is so bad.
Yeah,
this is
exactly.
So bad.
Like, don't. It's one thing if you're looking at nutrition labels, like if you have like an allergy or you are trying to just get like more nutrients into your body, that's different. But being obsessive about every single label, like that's how I noticed that I was restricting, is I would look at a label and I would want this product and it would scare me, and I would just put it back and I would grab something else that was like lower calorie or lower, you know, like anything that wasn't as much as whatever I grabbed.
There's you know, Michael Pollan is, he wrote a book called The Omnivore's Dilemma. He's like a journalist, writes books though, and usually nonfiction ones in the world of like food and stuff. Mm-hmm. But he wrote Omnivore's Dilemma, which was like really impactful book for me. But then he wrote this other one. It was a smaller volume that was supposed to be like kind of his one about like how to eat, basically, yeah. Because people like were so out of touch with that. And he's got still, I think, the best food rules that I've ever read, which is like, just like eat real food, not too much, mostly vegetables. And like, that's it. Like, that's like it. He's like, if you just can start to tune into that thing and be like, because we can recognize is like, is it food or not? Like,
yeah.
Is it some weird, and it's funny, I fall into this shit like ice cream. You know that Halo Top ice cream?
Have
you seen
I love
that?
Halo Top.
It's very fucking good for what it is. Yes. Although I think like it's got all these sugar alcohols in it that don't
it
make
does.
Me feel good. I mean,
yeah,
I feel like
does.
Fucking gassy as shit.
It does have a lot of sugar alcohols.
But it's like, I was like, what you just said is just resonated with me about like the nutritionist being like, what are you doing? It's like, I probably would be better off just like crushing some like real ice cream made with like good ingredients, mm-hmm. than being like, oh, but this is like basically real food if you look at the macros.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. like this thing of like, I don't know. There's something too about like when you repress like a thing that you want, like, that it comes out like across the spectrum of psychological thought. Like if you repress something that is an urge, it pathologizes somehow. Mm-hmm. Like if you pretend you don't feel a way, it's going to come out somewhere, and usually like in more harmful and more extreme ways.
Oh yes.
And so if you like are hungry or like have a taste for something that like you want to eat, that like you're like, no, but I can't. Eventually it's going to come out in like weird binges and weird
I was going to say this second that I restrict myself in the tiniest way. It could be literally like, I want potato, or like I want french fries, but I'm gonna have potatoes because that's like quote unquote healthier than french fries, which it's not. And I binged.
Yeah.
That's literally what happened. Was the second that I restrict myself is I automatically have those thoughts and I just go straight to wanting to binge everything.
Yeah.
Like, if you restrict, like all throughout the day, at the end of the night, that's when you're going to break. Yeah. And that's also, and I asked my dietitian, I was like, why is it at nighttime that like people tend to binge?
I get that hard.
It's literally at nighttime. And she kind of explained that nighttime is like when you're winding down, you're not really thinking about a lot. It's very lonely. Like, I don't know why, but and it does make sense. Like, it's very, like, nighttime is very lonely. It's normally cooler. It's dark. So a lot of those uncomfortable feelings tend to come up at nighttime.
That happens to me.
Yeah.
Hard.
So that's why treat yourself during the day.
Totally. So you're saying like, that's like a strategist, or like just eat what you want during
the
day.
Eat what you want during. Yes, yeah, yeah. Exactly. Yes.
Because in the dark, you're like, we're in the dark now.
And I did that. Like I had a day where I didn't track. Because that was one of my challenges is I love to
do you
make
still
sure.
track?
I do. And
I tracked my
don't...
macros one there's earlier this year for like 6 weeks. And it was interesting for me. It was nice to see.
Yeah.
But
it didn't
not
work.
Sustainable for me.
It's not. No, it's the same thing with me. Like, it's not the only reason why I'm still is because I'm still in recovery. Like, I am not recovered at all. And also it's going to take a very long time. I recently learned that after all eating disorder behaviors are gone, like if I'm not thinking about it, nothing, like everything is gone, it takes 2 to 3 years after that to be fully recovered.
Crazy.
It's a long process. So I do, but I'm not supposed to. Like, and my dietitian and my therapist, they're very aware of it and they're working on me. Like, they're giving me challenges. Like, once a week, I have to take a day where I just don't track anything. And those are very, very scary days for me. They make me very uncomfortable. But the more that I do it, the less scary it becomes. And then eventually, I'm not going to feel the need to do it anymore.
Yeah.
It's exposure therapy.
Yeah.
And that's what I'm doing. I'm facing all of my fears so that they're not fears anymore.
And what's the fear specifically there?
With when it comes to food.
Yeah, you're saying like with the face of the face.
Really, it's just about weight gain. Like it's fear, because I'm specifically diagnosed with anorexia nervosa, and I was very obsessed with exercise. Like I do love to exercise. Right. Like I love working out. I lift 5 days a week, but it was to the point where I was not eating nearly enough for the yeah. amount of calories I was burning and how much I was purging. Also, purging is not just making yourself throw up. Purging is forcing yourself to over-exercise or well. Like right. there's so many different sweat ways to purge. Yeah. And oof. That was my way of purging of I would eat something and then I'd be like, all right, I got to go exercise now. I got to burn that all off. And it was to the point where I went into a cannabolic state. Like my body started eating whew. Itself.
Yep.
And I was in urgent care all the time. What? And I was just really? Like, yes, because my body was eating itself. And I was just like, oh, I have this problem. I have this problem. And they like, would try and tell me.
What
were some of those problems?
Like what would it manifest as?
There was one time where I went to the gym and I came home and I literally just passed out. Like I just fell. And I was like shaky. I wasn't feeling good. I constantly had to go to the bathroom. Like I constantly had to pee all the time. Sorry, this is TMI.
No.
But I believe that it's because I didn't have enough in my body and I was only drinking like a lot of water. So it just literally went right through me. Like it was just like, if I drink water, it would just go, okay, time to come out. Like because I didn't have anything to kind of keep it. Like, I don't know. I don't know how that works.
No,
I'm still
learning.
Like
it. I'm like really facing that I fucking have an eating disorder while I'm listening to you.
Really?
Kinda.
I mean, it's really common. Like it's not, and by talking to some people, I've helped people realize like, oh my gosh, I think I have, because there is a difference between eating disorders and disordered eating.
Uh-huh.
Eating disorders, I would have to find like the actual criteria. I'm not.
But what? And I know we all understand that you're not like a quote unquote.
Oh,
doctor.
Not.
You're
just
speaking
not at
from
all.
Your experience,
but just
and,
yeah, strictly yeah, you, experience and the knowledge that I've had from treatment.
Exactly, which is so invaluable. Like anybody who's like gone into the dark and can come back and talk about it, it's so helpful. But like, yeah, what? Yeah, like okay, like I quit drinking this year, mm-hmm. pretty much completely. Like there was like two times that I had some alcohol, and they were for like very weird, specific, good like. Ritualistic reasons, but I wouldn't say that I'd say it benefit me incredibly. Like mm-hmm. I love it. I don't miss it. You know, really at all. But I wouldn't say I'm like a 12-step sober person. I'm not working a program, and I'm not like oh, if I have something, I'm gonna relapse.
Yeah,
and,
yeah, yeah.
You know, I still smoke weed, mm-hmm. Whatever. But that's kind of what I'm starting to think is like when I'm talking to you, I'm like all these things you're saying, even down to some of the physical symptoms, I experience like the peeing all the time thing is such a weird one.
Every
like,
20 minutes I'm literally a pregnant woman. Like that's what it's like.
Do you shit a lot too?
so my
I mean
my
you know.
Issue with it, no, I don't care. I don't have a happy middle because of my colon. Like that it's either
that's fair.
I don't have a happy middle. Like
I
it has
that.
To do it's it my way of using the bathroom is borderline. Like it's very black and white. It's very black and white. It's either all or nothing.
I gotta see a GI doctor.
Same I'm figuring that out.
Maybe I have extra colon. I mean no but I do feel, I don't know, I'm very extreme in that regard also. It's just weird. I don't know. There seems to be something intertwined, like psychologically, even like with a deep existential question, like the mechanisms of sustaining and nourishing your physical form become these ways to hurt yourself, or that you feel confused about, or you don't understand, and that feels very tied to me, like intimately with this like question of my existence and what the fuck am I and why am I here and am I a bad thing and like feeling like strange and not right in the world. Like that's how I feel often and have for a long time. And that there is, that it's interesting then that in, I mean, I've always said, I still feel this way. Like I'll catch myself in reflections and get caught in them sometimes because I don't identify with myself. Like I don't, it's weird to be like, that's me. I'm in this thing. And that's so strange. Like this dissociation with your physical form. And that like, then the question of the mechanism of the vessel and like what serves it and what feeds it and how your different metabolisms work. And you know what I mean? Like your synthesis processes and how they function. It just feels like there's something in that confusion about that and that strangeness about like how that works and why it works and what's the deal with it and how do I do it the best version that it can be. I don't know. that seems really tied to like being really feeling weird about existing in general.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
No, I agree with that. Also, I'm curious. I do want to ask you a question. Is, do you think that you almost want to have some sort of medical diagnosis, like physical, like health wise, because you don't want to face the fact that you could possibly have disordered eating or an eating disorder?
Maybe. I mean, for just like definitely for the shitting and stuff like that. Yeah. Like I shit all fucking day long so many times. And I feel like I constantly am taking like road trip bathroom breaks, I call them.
Yo,
just like,
same.
Really? Just
same.
Like, I'm like, I don't know what I'm
on the side of the road all the time.
Well, and on why I always call them that, like this idea of like, we're going to be in the car for 3 hours. So pee now, even if you don't have to go, make yourself pee. I feel like I'm always doing that.
Same.
I'm doing that before working out, especially before jujitsu all the time. I'm like, I have like a weird anxiety that today will be the day that I don't tap and I choke out and then I shit myself on the mat and I don't want to do it. Which is like never happens, but you know, it's like a weird, but anyway, so I do wish I had some medical reason that people would be like, you're allergic to gluten. That's what it is. Or you're, you know, or
we all want answers
because yeah, we want fucking answers.
We all
cause
want
I just
answers.
Would love a magic bullet where I go like, oh, now I'm normal. The closest thing to that has just been Metamucil. Like if you fucking just eat psyllium husk, it's like a beautiful thing. You just get, it really does change some of that. For the better.
So I want to tell you something kind of shitty, no pun intended. Mm-hmm. You may not get the answer. Part of the dialectics, which I study is radical acceptance, is you may not get the answer. And that's something that you're going to have to accept.
Yes. You know? I think you're right. I think this is like, that's very profound. I mean, like as you're talking about it, I'm like, yeah, you know, it's weird because my physical practices have shifted so much over the years. Like I've done, I used to teach CrossFit. I've done like more and less intense phases of MMA. I've done like powerlifting cycles and bodybuilding cycles and ones where I just want to get as big as I could, all these things. And now my favorite one is very similar to what we're talking about, like eating strategies, which is like, I go to the space I'm going to move around because I think that's very fucking important to like live in your body and move your body around and be happy with it. And,
oh, yeah.
And I just want my physical practices mainly to make my body feel like less of a prison and deal with pain and things like that I have. And then I kind of just go listen and be like, what do I need to do today? And I usually start just like moving around. It's kind of stretching and it turns into some exercise and then maybe I'll add some weights in or whatever. But it's become a very holistic in its best thing of like listening to yourself and doing things. That being said, if I don't put some discipline into like make myself do it, like because I always feel better after doing it.
Yeah.
I sometimes won't. You'll fall into like ruts. And it does feel really closely related to this eating thing where it's like with my eating, I'm 33 years old and after my whole life of eating and then a lot of phases of reading and learning and blah, 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 nutritional stuff for different exercising things, I still like often will be like, I don't know how to eat. You know what I mean? Like I'll just in the day, I'll just be like, I don't know. What am I supposed to be eating to be healthy and to not feel like horrible all the time? And this thing you're saying about like, you just may not get an answer. And also I think facing up to the possibility that the bad feelings that I have and the physical manifestations of them, including like the IBS stuff, mm-hmm. might not have to do with food at all.
No,
like
it could just be a straight up medical issue.
Yeah. Or mental, right?
Or mental.
Like it
or
feels like
think,
I could be
yeah.
doing like the way I process. I mean, I associate a lot of my stomach problems is starting around like 9 to 12, 13, whatever, when, which correlates to like when my family started like dissolving like crazy.
Yeah.
You know, when like big conflicts started happening and I was like the oldest and I would hear about them and I would kind of like be consulting my parents. I would like parenting them, you know,
yeah.
And started like all the stress and feeling of like wrongness and that like, I still just process it in my gut like immediately.
Well, actually your gut is very, very connected to your brain. Have you ever heard of like the mind to gut connection?
Yeah.
No, it does. Like it if you have a crappy diet, like if you are just eating like, you know, like as I said before, like in and out three times a day, that can cause depression, that can cause anxiety, that can cause a lot of mental disorders because of the way of what you're putting into your body. You're not getting enough nutrients. Like when I wasn't getting enough nutrients, I felt like shit. I could not do anything. I literally could not walk my dog without getting winded or feeling like I just ran like 12 miles.
When you were doing, what was the circumstance?
This was when I was very, very low weight. I was eating about like 1500 calories a day and exercising for almost 2 hours. Uh-huh. Very, very intensely.
Just catabolic for
yeah.
sure.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Yeah.
Eating
definitely.
Yourself alive.
And it was because I wasn't getting the nutrients that I needed. So it really affected, I couldn't think straight. Like I felt like I was dumb. Like I kept telling my family, I was like, yeah. I feel stupid. Like I literally cannot have it. A full conversation with someone because I feel like I'm not even there. Like I'm in like a dreamlike state.
Yeah.
And the tinier that I got, the more depressed I got.
Yeah.
And that has to do with the fact that I wasn't feeding my body what it needed.
That's, you know, something that comes up on this podcast sometime, especially like with ADHD stuff, is what I first had the thought was that like there's a lot of standard practices in our society now that I do believe are like basically building ADHD brains, like overusing your dopamine receptors with like the internet and constantly needing new dopamine, blah blah, like that. I'm not a scientist, but that seems like a good way to mimic the actual circumstances, like the actual mechanism behind ADHD, or like yeah. your dopamine receptors don't yeah. receive as well and they don't get satisfied and so you can't focus. Mm-hmm. It's interesting this thing you're saying about like with eating disorder stuff. I was just talking about this on the last podcast, was that the overall message, I think, to women in popular health and fitness culture, too, is like to be less, is yes. like to be smaller,
yep.
be less offensive, like to have less, you know, body, take up less space, yeah. be smaller.
Yep.
And then maybe someone will love you and like they'll scoop you up and they'll mm-hmm. be like a little person, you know, and it's like really fucking fucked up. And that's like a really yeah. unfortunate message that like it's just interesting because like the actual, if you are actually a diagnosed person who's really struggling from it and like mm-hmm. that's still the impulse, like is there like what is in that, is there some impulse to like disappear,
oh my
to,
gosh,
like, hurt,
yes.
to go to die, like what's
I was
driving
just
it?
I was literally just discussing this with my roommate today. Yeah, I mean, that is a big symptom when it comes to eating disorders, is we do kind of feel like we're a waste of space. So the smaller that we are, you know, we just, it's almost like we're not there.
Mm-hmm.
Because as I said before, it's about the body, but it's not about the body. It also has a lot to do with your history and depression, anxiety, like yeah. it is an anxiety disorder. So we're kind of like anxious at the fact of just like, oh, are we too much? Are we,
yes.
That's really what I can, how I can describe it is, are we too much? That's my personal
that's
thinking
what I
process.
Would say. And that's part of the one you said earlier, backing up, but like when you were like, what made you think you were borderline?
Yeah.
That would be a common thing was I'd be like, I'm always too much. People
too
always
much.
Tell me I'm too much.
Too
I'm
much.
Too intense. Yes. I know I'm too much.
What is too much?
But then like, I'd wear it as a badge of like self harm. Like, I know I'm too, like very emo, you know, smoking clove cigarettes, like goth kid. Like,
oh yeah.
I know I'm too much. I'm too intense for people.
Like we're told to be ourselves, but then if we're too much ourselves, then they're like, all right, you got to sit down.
Yeah.
So what are we supposed to do?
But then don't you have to moderate? Like, I do think I can be too much. Like, to me, that's what the dialectical stuff you're describing is about. I've never formally been taught that, but in like different mindfulness practices and therapy things about basically kind of being able to go like, am I being too much? And if I'm being too much, can I just acknowledge that without it being bad? And I can like, am I being too much for myself?
That's
am I overreacting to
that's
a situation?
That's actually really good that you're yeah. doing that. That's a DBT strategy actually is doing self-check-ins. Like I'll do like normally I'll sit at like a 3 or a 4. And then the fact that I passed a 4 and I go higher
than
that.
What does that mean, a 3 or 4? What does that mean?
I give myself like a number. What would I call it? A number,
like a rating system?
Yeah, kind of like 1 being like emotionless, 10 being like off the fucking walls, like screaming,
got
like literally
it.
Like the biggest emotion.
Like how, so it's a scale of like how activated
yes,
you
yes,
feel?
Yes, a scale. That's what I was trying. I could not think
oh,
of the
scale,
word.
Okay,
a scale.
Yeah.
Yes, a scale. So I normally sit at about a 3 or a 4.
Yep.
That's me because I'm not obviously emotionless and I'm a pretty bubbly person. So that's where I sit. And the second that I pass that, and I'll do little check-ins. Like I'll be like, okay, what number am I? Oof, I'm leaning towards a 5.
Got it.
And then I'll do like another skill. Like if it's the stop skill or if it's a tip skill. A tip skill is also a temperature thing and it's a scientific thing. Like if you're having anxiety, you take a cold object and you put it right in the middle of your forehead.
Mm.
And it brings down your heart rate.
Would you call that a tip skill?
Yes, tip. So it's temperature, intense exercise, and then, oh my gosh, I forget what the P is. I don't know if it's... I forget what the T is. But yeah, that's another skill. So temperature, as in like putting...
Like literally cooling off.
Some people will literally dip their heads in ice buckets. Oh,
that's so interesting.
And it just brings it. Like, I've done that so many times. I was having a really, really bad panic attack and I just felt like I couldn't breathe. And I was so uncomfortable. And all I did was just grab a frozen orange. I put it right in the middle of my forehead and I was just like calming down.
Wow.
Like, I physically felt my body calm down. Like, I was not anxious. So that's one of my favorite things. But what I do is body checks. So if I'm going past a 4, I'll do a skill and then I'll come back and I'll be like, okay, where am I at now? And then I'm like, oh, okay, I went down a little bit. Maybe I should do something else. Like, I do self check-ins. I have to be very, very self-aware, because that's what you're taught in DBT, is to learn how to be self-aware and fix things on your own, pretty much, because at the end of the day, no one's going to save you. The only person that you have is yourself. And the only person that's stopping you is yourself.
Yeah.
You know?
So... it does seem like this borderline stuff and the eating disorder stuff really is very closely related.
Very much so. That's, as I said before, it's one of the symptoms is borderline, is a lot of borderline people have eating disorders.
Yeah. I thought we would we'll segue to the six quick cues thing. So we kind of started like already, we've been talking about it since the beginning, but the first one is that question of like, what have you been specifically diagnosed with?
Oh yeah.
So that is somebody told you you're borderline.
Borderline, eating disorder, anxiety, depression. That's what it is. And this actually, so I've publicly spoke about my eating disorder, I think not too much, because I actually just recently kind of came out with it. I put a video on my Instagram, and the borderline thing is actually something that I have not, and I've actually been this is congratulations, you should feel honored that this is actually the first time
that
I've talked about it. But
it's very like in the news right now.
It's actually, because right now, I don't know if you know who Pete Davidson is.
Mm-hmm.
He's a comedian on SNL, engaged to Ariana Grande, for those of you who actually don't know what he is.
Well, he was.
He was engaged to Ariana. I said who don't know what he is.
He's just the ex of Ariana Grande. Thank you, next.
He's just the ex. No, and that's the big thing, is he just came out about how he's suicidal right now and how he's being attacked online, and he's one of the only celebrities that have come out with borderline personality disorder. And what people don't know is how insanely common it is. Did you know that every single human has borderline traits?
Some have
more than others.
Yeah.
It's a set of behaviors. It's not like a mental disorder. Like, you're not, if you Google it, it's scary. It's fucking scary. Like, it is.
You That's mean because I, you're like,
because of the symptoms or what it says on
makes
there.
You like, feel like
it
makes you have it right away.
Yeah. People, like I tell people, I'm just kind of like, I wouldn't Google if I were you. Just talk to me about it and I'll explain it to you, because some people have it worse. And when you Google it, it's like the extreme of the extreme.
Right.
I'm not the extreme.
Well, I don't know. Yeah. But all that stuff, like the extreme responses. I mean, that's what I've experienced, but like love hate responses to people, like this kind of, you know what I mean? Like, that sounds all. Yeah. Very common.
It is like it's unstable relationships. It's a skewed sense of self. It's unable to control your emotions, your anger, fear of abandonment, mm-hmm. all of that.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I'm constantly afraid when people come into my life that they're just going to go. That for no reason, for no logical reason, they don't have to give me a reason. It's just, I automatically think that you're going to hurt. Like, you're going to hurt me because of what I've dealt with in the past. I have had people that have come into my life, promised that they would be there, and then they just kind of disappeared. But that happens to everyone, I'm pretty sure.
But it feels like related to your DBT thing too. Like, when things like that happen, being able to like step outside of it and go like, oh, there's not some cosmic curse that I have. It's just, this is what happened in this situation, right? Like it sounds like it would be important to like, not let yourself build narratives. Like, I feel like I remember a lot of bad things. Like, or you store up a lot of bad things.
Oh my
gosh,
so you go
like, oh, this happens to me all the time. But you don't keep track of like they're kind of isolated incidents, or there's other good things that happen too, but you
we just
store
automatically
up.
Think of all the bad things. Like that's it. We completely ignore everything good and we just automatically go to the bad things. Like I could, fun fact, for the listeners, like I'm a singer and an actor. So let's say like I got a really big job, but something bad also happened to me. I would be like, fuck this job. I'm only focusing on like the bad thing that happened to me.
Ooh, yeah.
And it's rough, man. It's definitely rough. It's, but the beauty of it also, and this is something that a lot of people don't know, you can get rid of it. Mm. It's not like bipolar disorder. It's not like schizophrenia or anything like that, because it's a set of behaviors. Like it's not like a, it's very, very hard to explain. And
yeah, I feel like I know what you mean though.
Yeah. So it's, and that's what dialectical behavioral therapy does, is it teaches you how to get rid of those traits and how to control your emotions. And once you do that, if you don't have the traits anymore, you can't be diagnosed.
Right.
Some people have depression and then they either take medication or they get help or therapy and then they don't have depression anymore. And it's the same exact thing. Like you're not stuck with it. Unfortunately, with like the disorders that I mentioned before, like bipolar, schizophrenia, any of that, that does unfortunately stay with you for the rest of your life and you will have it. You just kind of learn how to deal with it. And, like you'll take medication for it and stuff like that. But with the borderline, you can get rid of it. Like it's something that's, oh, ciao. Hello, people from out of the country.
Well, so then on the heels of that, the second question is always, what medications do you take or have you tried? Actually, my other question, this is related also.
So
definitely medications. I'm curious about what you still take and what works for you, what hasn't worked, including like if you've tried to manage it with like drugs or anything like that. And also kind of on that last question, like how old were you when people were like, you have whatever, borderline or depression?
Okay,
or
so the borderline was actually literally, as I said before.
Well, I know you did say you were hospitalized when you were 8.
Yes, I wasn't fully diagnosed. Like, I actually have not been fully diagnosed. My psychiatrist has just been like, you have a lot of traits. Like, you have the traits of
gotcha.
It. But that's also why, like, I entered treatment right away, is because I was just like, well, if I can catch this early, then I can just learn how to manage it, you know? But I started to get diagnosed with depression. I have OCD. I was actually diagnosed with OCD. I was very obsessive like that, and it tied into the orthorexia that I explained with the obsessive of health and not eating any quote-unquote junk food. I was a very, very angry child. My childhood was, it's very confusing and a lot of people don't really understand it at all either, and it's something that I haven't really talked about a lot, but I did have traumatic events happen to me when I was younger. And that kind of led to me being confused with how to handle my emotions and the things that happened to me, that I took it out like when I was in elementary school. Like I went and I did all these like weird things. Like I got into fights with people. Like my mom told me that I bit somebody when I was like 6. I was just trying to find myself, and I truly just did not know, because no one taught me how. And also it wasn't a popular thing. Like borderline is popular, but it's not known or talked about a lot. So it's, so people think that it's rare, but it's not. It's actually really, really, really common. So that happened. And then I ended up having to leave school because I wasn't really getting the care that I need. Like I was a hurt kid. Like I had traumatic events happen to me as a child that I did not ask for. And I didn't know how to handle it. Like I really didn't. I was also very over sexualized too. Like I remember I was younger and I think I went up to some kids at school and I was wearing like underwear and I like lifted up my dress and I was just like, surprise, look what I have. And apparently that has to do with like the stuff that happened to me. And, that's how I expressed myself, was just either being, very overly sexual or very angry. Huh. And those are the two.
Yeah, that's
those
are
the
two.
Yeah, I know. It's weird. I'm
still
trying
like
to understand
extreme
it.
States. They're like
extreme states. Yes.
They're kind of like taboo.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So so then the medication stuff, what have you tried?
Oh my gosh. Okay. So my parents know all of it. I'm trying to remember. Right now I'm currently taking Wellbutrin and Lexapro, and they actually go, they worked really well. They go hand in hand. Like the Lexapro, works with the Wellbutrin and kind of intensifies it. So mm-hmm. it just makes it so much better. But I've tried Lamictal. I was on Zoloft was what I was on. And that's really common. Like I talk to a lot of people who have anxiety or depression. They're on Zoloft. So that was one of the big ones. And I was on that for about 15 years. That was my main medication.
Yeah.
And then I did something called Trileptal. I tried, what else have I, recently also tried some, there was something, Trintellix, and it's a new one that I just, mm-hmm. and this was something that I tried about 8 months ago, and it made me feel crazy. Like I literally hallucinated. Like it was like, it was scary. Like I felt like I was on drugs, and we stopped that right away. Yeah. I was like, no, we are not doing that. And it medication is really all about experimenting. And of course I didn't really want it either. Like I was, no one wants it. No one like sits it, and it's just like, yay, I want medication. Like right. that's just, no. that doesn't exist. But, I don't produce enough serotonin in my brain. Like it's a chemical imbalance that I truly can't help. Like that's how I was born. I don't produce. So it makes me sadder than most people.
Right.
And that's why I do the therapy that I do in order to help, challenge those thoughts and reframe them and make sure that I'm thinking straight.
I kind of related to some of the stuff we were talking earlier. I wanted to ask you about this too, because I find physical activity like regulating, and I almost treat it like a treatment thing.
Okay.
But it can easily become kind of the same way with drugs, you know, drugs and alcohol, prescription or not, whatever, like can help as much as you can use them as a harmful tool also.
Oh, yeah.
So for you, with things like body image stuff and eating disorder stuff and orthorexia stuff, like how do you, like, where's that line for you with your physical practices to know when you're like using it for something to like help take control and like make things better?
I'm still figuring that out.
Yeah.
I am still, that's one of the big things that I'm struggling with now, is because I do have a love for exercise, but I also used it as a way to pretty much harm myself.
Yeah.
Was because I was just getting smaller and smaller and smaller, and I wasn't feeding my body what it needed. And that's where I find. So my dietitian, she gave me an article that I wish that I had on me, because it was fantastic, and it pretty much explained the difference between exercising like for your body and for like the love of it, and between, you know, doing it because you feel like you have to, because you ate food or it's as a punishment. So I have to do like check-ins with myself. Like let's say I went out to eat, or there was a holiday that came up and I want to go to the gym. I have to go, okay, Laura, do I want to go to the gym because like I love working out? Working out is something that I naturally do. I love to lift and it makes me feel good and strong. Or is it because I feel like I need to punish myself because of the food that I ate? Like I just have to do check-ins. I have to do, it's the feeling. And I also learned to not exercise until I'm crawling out of there anymore. Like you're not supposed to do that. You are supposed to have like energy afterwards. Yeah. You're supposed to feel good. Are you tired? Of course. But I was like tired to the point where I needed to sleep all day. Like I didn't want to talk to anyone. I didn't want to go anywhere, but it was to the point where like I literally just needed to sleep all day. And that's when I realized, okay, this is a problem. Mm-hmm. So I do have people that still like keep me accountable. Like I have people, I go to LA Fitness, and they're like my family there. Like God bless them. They will keep me accountable. They'll watch me. They'll see if I'm there for too long. Like even the other day, I have been struggling with a little bit of my depression because of the holiday season. And I know a lot of people, like literally everyone I feel like that I've talked to is not happy right now. Cause this is one of the most difficult times of the year. And, they're aware of that, and they saw me, and I was there for almost 2 hours, and one of the trainers just came up to me and was like, listen, Laura, like overtraining is not the answer. Like it's just not. Like all you're doing is just hurting yourself. Like why do you want to feel like shit? Like why are you making yourself, like you already are not feeling good, so why would you want to make yourself feel worse? And I'm just like, you're right. I just want to get my mind off of it, like blah, blah, blah. And he was just like, that's not it. You know, there are so many other ways to do it. And
Yeah.
Talk about it, dude. Like, talk. Like, just start talking about it. Like, tell me how you feel. And the second that I started to talk about it, and I kind of processed and I ended up working it out, and I didn't feel the need to be there anymore. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to go home. I'm going to cuddle my dog and put on a face mask and drink some wine and treat myself the way that I deserve. Yeah. You know?
That's great.
Yeah.
Well, the third question is, what's something cheesy that you find inspiring?
Something cheesy that I find inspiring.
Yeah.
Well, I'm a very emotional person, so like everything kind of inspires me.
I cry at everything.
Okay, so the other day, I just was going on a mindfulness walk with my dog. Like, I like to leave my phone and just kind of be. Yep. You know, like I look at all the trees, look at all the people. And this is when I was not really feeling super amazing and my depression was getting the best of me. I was just looking at the people and their families. Like it was a Sunday and people were outside because it was a beautiful day. Just seeing life happen. Mm-hmm. Like just seeing people smile, seeing them with their family, seeing them play with their dog, seeing this father throw a football with his son, just life happening. It was inspiring to me to just keep going and to just want to be and just want to be here, because even the time it just kind of made me realize like the tiniest little things to be grateful for. And I know so many people that were not able to experience that, or that did unfortunately leave this earth. If they saw that, I know that they would still like want to be here. 95%, it's 90 or 95% of people who attempt suicide or survive suicide, they are happy that they're alive. Yeah. Like that is a cold, hard fact.
Yeah.
They are happy. So we just got to learn how to figure out what to do in those moments when we're feeling like that. So that, because we don't want to go there. Like and then a lot of the times I know people that have gone to that extreme, and I'm sure that they regret it. Because I know them, and I know that they, you know, they'll have their extremes and they'll have their high highs and low lows. And if they learned how to handle that, if they learn these skills, the skills that I learn in therapy, the skills that I want to fight to get into schools, I think that she would still be alive. Mm. And I think a lot of other people would still be alive. So that's why I want to do it now. But unfortunately, it's a money issue and it's about funding my therapist kind of explained to me, I said, well, why can't we just get this into schools now? And she goes, well, if they're going to put money towards it, they need facts. Like they're going to have to do like experiments almost. Like they would put it in schools and then they would have to wait until those kids grew up and see how their lives are.
Right.
That's the kind of study that they would have to do. And I was kind of like, that's too long. Like people are struggling now.
Totally.
Like like the suicide rate and depression rate in our generation is at its all-time high.
Yeah.
Like all-time high. And right now I've noticed people are starting to talk about it a little more, but like social media is so prominent and no one talks about it on there. Like all like people with millions of followers, like they call themselves influencers. Mm-hmm. Who are you influencing?
Well,
to make people sick? Like I see Fit Tea all the time. That's giving people eating disorder thoughts.
Yeah, totally.
Of you're not worthy because you're this weight.
Right.
But that's not true. And that's another thing that I wanna fight, is to make sure that people with these platforms use them for good. Because I'm just so tired of seeing that. And they don't even help any of their followers either. Like I'll see comments like, oh my God, I wish I was you. I wish I looked like that. And they'll just be like, thank you.
Yeah.
Like they're not like, girl, you're beautiful. Like how you were born is beautiful. And I don't know. It's just really, really frustrating and really sad to me. And I hate it. But that's why I'm not going to stop until I can make a difference. Mm. Like that's something that's like super, super important to me.
Well, the next one is segues kind of well into what's something dark about you.
A lot.
Yeah, I know. I mean, we're pretty open about it, but
a lot. Like I've had, I mean, Maybe be like a little more specific. Like, what do you like?
I don't know.
I mean, I've kind of went over.
Pretty open about it.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
It's
kind
of
like,
good. I mean, like, I have that question because a lot of sort of with the influence thing you're talking about, a lot of people just don't talk about it. They don't talk about like dark things about them. They don't talk about like impulses or problems they face or things, which I know we've like talked about that broadly, but I just like to say that because like, I don't know. I think of a lot of us have like some like goth part of ourselves or some dark part of ourselves that we feel we feel like there's something like fucking, we're like, oh, we have to hide that part and act like not. But I think like acknowledging that these things are part of us is like important.
I mean, if I'm being completely and totally honest, I don't really have any secrets. Like, yeah. I'm so open. You actually got one out of me. Like, you got the whole borderline thing.
Oh,
like, that
really?
was one thing that I never actually, like, if people like ask me about it, but it's not something that I've like spoken about publicly or like on social media or like a podcast or anything.
I totally
like
get that. I think the label feels scary.
Labels are so scary. Like, I cried for so long when it was even a thought. Like, when someone was just like, yeah, you might have this. I was like, I lost it.
Why? Because you feel like, oh, that means I'm a fucking like, crazy person or something.
Yeah, you know, but also it did give me like a sense of relief at the same time because I had so many questions. I was like, why was I the way that I was when I was a kid? Why did I do this? Why did I act like that? Why did I think like this? Like, I had so many questions. And like when I finally found out, I was like, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Okay. And it was kind of like, this is how I was born, and I have to accept it. And guess what? I can fix it.
That's the best. that's the most inspiring. Totally,
is that I can fix it. It is hard, and it takes a lot of strength to do because recovery is not linear. Like, it's not.
Yeah.
People just think that it's just like, oh, okay, you're better. No, it's like this is how I see recovery.
You're making a wave with your hands,
like literally going, like just
up
going
and up, and
going
up.
Like, there's, it's like a roller coaster, but it's going up.
Yeah, I something once they describe history like politically, like it's not a pendulum; it doesn't go back like left and right, left and right. It's like an upward spiral.
Yeah,
so it does go back and forth, but you're always kind of steadily moving upwards.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's good. All right, well, the next question is: what's the last gorgeous thing you saw?
The last gorgeous thing that I saw. I mean, whenever I drive in the car, I look out and I think that California is gorgeous, which is why I live here. But I mean, the whole me walking with my dog and seeing life happen, that was something.
Is it like a park? Where was that?
No, it was literally my neighborhood.
Yeah.
Like, it was just my neighborhood. And I just moved to my house, so I didn't really get to explore my neighborhood. And that was kind of like the first time that I actually did.
Yeah.
And it was like just kind of beautiful. I loved all the houses. I loved the people smiling. I had a Christmas party on Friday and some people came up to sing and everyone was so supportive. And that was like beautiful to me. Like, I thought that was, their voice was gorgeous.
Their voices
were absolutely stunning. But seeing like, also, I had a bunch of people clean my entire house for me.
That's the best.
That was shocking to me.
Like after the party, you mean?
After the party.
Yeah.
Like, who does that? Like,
dude,
you go to houses, you get drunk, and then you leave. They literally stayed and they said, no, we're helping you clean up. Like, we're making, like, you let us in. You let us in your home.
How old are they?
They were in their, like, 20s. They were in their
mid-20s.
Yeah. Like,
dude, honestly think that's one of the, like, things of like when you start growing up, the parties that starts happening at parties.
Yeah.
I was
like,
I know.
I even tried to wash some of my own dishes and I got yelled at. Like, like they were just really like, no, you sit down. Like, you need to relax. Like, you did so much tonight. And I was just like, okay.
Yeah.
And I was just very, very thankful.
God,
but yeah, that was probably one of the last gorgeous things that I saw. Like, everyone together, like, just the support and how nice everybody was.
Beautiful.
It was beautiful to me. Like, it was.
All right. Here's the very last one. I have this thing called the Don't Kill Yourself list. And I was in like a really fucking bad time in my life.
Oh, I love this.
I started the Don't Kill Yourself list. For me, it always starts with coffee, sandwiches, and lavender soap. And it's things that are usually like pretty accessible, not like, you know, too abstract necessarily. They can be, but not usually. Mm-hmm. And things that you feel personally for your subjective experience are objectively good reasons to keep existing in this plane.
There's so many. Mm-hmm. Like, it would take me like hours to write. Like, I could write a book.
Whatever.
On
yeah,
it.
Just pick some of your favorite. What occurs to you?
First of all, the people in my life. Oh my God, do I have a support team?
Yeah.
Like, I have some amazing, amazing human beings in my life that I am so, so, so blessed to have. And I'm meeting even more. Like, mm-hmm. I'm literally every day I feel like I meet like a new person. Like, yeah. The other night when I had my party, I met so many beautiful people. I was like, oh my gosh, I'm so happy you're here.
Yeah.
So that's a big thing, is the people in my life. Like, I don't have the heart to leave them. Yeah. I love them too much. What else? Things that I haven't experienced yet. I'm 22. I'm about to turn 23 in February. Like, I have a whole yeah. life. Yeah. I have a whole life that I have not. I haven't even been out of the country. Mm. Like, I literally have not. I haven't been out of the U.S.
Yep.
I need to explore. I want to travel. I want to experience. Three, I want my fucking dreams to come true. I'm not going anywhere until my dreams come true.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I know why I was put on this earth, and I'm not going to stop until I do it.
Yeah.
Like, I'm just not, like, I am not doing anything else.
Even that's like a hard exercise to go through, I think, when you're not in a good place, is like to imagine yourself in the future, to have a future vision. You know what I mean?
Yes.
Like, I think I spent most of my 20s not thinking I would like really live past 30 very long.
Same. I didn't think that I was going to make it to 21.
Well, there you go.
Yeah. I did.
Already
not
beaten it.
Yeah. I'm beating it. Turning 23.
Yeah. No, I think that's really weirdly subtle but important.
Yeah.
It's like truly having a vision of yourself in the future.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's so corny to talk about like goals. Like, goals are important. Mm-hmm. But
no,
like,
we need to have them.
Dude, for real.
It gives you a sense of purpose.
Yeah. It gives you some kind of focus of some kind to like what you're moving towards. And yeah, a belief in the future is like really important to keeping you in the present.
I mean, I know personally that I need to have something to look forward to motivate me to like get up and get out of bed and do that. Like, I need to make sure that like I'm doing something for a purpose, that I'm doing something for a reason. And sometimes it's totally okay to just be and not do anything. Mm-hmm. Like, I do. My anxiety is really bad when I'm not doing anything. Like, if I don't have anything to do, if I'm done with all my work, if I'm not, like, literally if I'm not doing anything, I will just start to like shake, and I'm like, I have to do things. Like, I will just clean random things because I just need to do something. And it's because we're kind of taught that if you don't, that we're taught to not relax, that we have to constantly be working, that we constantly have to go and go and go and go and go.
Completely.
And you need to relax. Like, if you don't give yourself a break, that's how you break down.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I see that. Like, one of my roommates, she was working so, so, so much, and to just kind of, you know, keep herself here, and she was breaking. Like, I watched it happen, and she just ended up breaking down and having a lot of stress and anxiety, and then she just didn't want to do anything at all.
Yep.
So it's like, you need to take care. You need to do self-check-ins. You need to take care of yourself, or else you're not going to get what you want, or you're not going to go. Like, if you're not healthy, if you're not mentally healthy, how are you supposed to do anything that you want to do?
Right.
Because you're going to be hyper-focused on all the bad shit that's happening in your life, you know?
Yeah.
So that's...
Well, we did it. We did the damn thing.
Yeah.
Thank you for being here. Thank you for sharing your good bad brain with us.
I'm happy to be here. I'm gonna end my live.
If people want to find the live thing, what's your Instagram or something?
Oh, at Laura Kate Cassidy.
Okay.
Thank you so much.
Dude, this rules. Thank you so much for doing this. Thanks for being so open about the borderline stuff. Just everything. This is dope. Thank you.
Thank you. No, I'm happy to be here.
All right. Well, happy holidays, everybody.
Happy holidays. Yeah. And everyone, please know that you're not alone. I know this is a tough time, but me and Jared are here for you.
Yeah, we definitely are. We're here.
We are here for you.
We've been in your ears for the last hour or so. So we're here. Yeah, I do feel that way, actually. I do. I mean, that's one of my favorite things about this podcast has been that I feel more connected to people who, even just listeners and people, like knowing that it resonates with other people as we talk about our struggles, and that there's something about that, just knowing that other people, that I think what you were saying about, like, there's some almost relief in having a diagnosis, because you, at first you're scared of being considered something bad, mm-hmm. like in your own brain, you're like, I must be crazy or something like that. Mm-hmm. But that actually seeing things that felt so singular and alone in the symptoms, and realizing a lot of people go through the same stuff, and that, you know, you're not some freak of nature, no. that like, you're just a normal part of,
I
like
was hurt.
This thing.
Like that yeah. was it is yeah. I was a hurt kid.
Right. And that it's totally like reasonable, like how you are. And what you said, I think is about like how you can fix it, that you can heal yourself if you do the, like, that's just so hopeful and beautiful, knowing that like you're not alone in your pain, that like there's people who've had it before you and who will have it after you, and that like there's a lot of wisdom there. I don't know, there's something about like just empathy, you know, they say like the difference between sympathy and empathy is like sympathy is like seeing, like saying like, oh, that sucks that something bad happened to you, mm-hmm. and like empathy has to do with like all just being present and being like, all bad things have happened to me also, and mm-hmm. we're like holding space for each other.
Yeah.
And to me, this thing that we're doing, I don't know, it's like it creates like this space that we're all holding for each other, like a knowledge that we are all like surviving,
which is why I'm going to talk about it and continue to talk about yeah. it, so that other people will move forward and talk about it.
Ditto. All right, thanks.
Of course.
Bye, guys. Thank you so much for listening to My Good Bad Brain again. If you enjoyed this pod, check us out on patreon.com/mygoodbadbrain, or leave us a review. You know, that's really dope also. All right, guys. Hydrate, self-care, be well. Thank you.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight, and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.